Just gather round, and I'll elucidate on what goes on outside when it gets late.
Long about midnight, the ghosts and banshees, they get together for their nightly jamboree.
There's things with horns and softer eyes.
Some with fangs about this time.
Some are fat, and some are thin.
And some don't even wear their skin.
Oh, I'm telling you, brother, it's a frightful sight to see what goes on Halloween night.
I went through to have a midnight jamboree. They break it up with keenest glee. Ghosts and bad, but the one that's cursed is the headless horseman. He's the worst.
That's why he had on Halloween night.
Oh, there they go, the jogging across the land, holding his noggin in his hand. Demons take one look and groan, and the hit the road the prophet alone.
Beware, take care, he rides alone.
And there's no spook like spooked spurs.
They don't like him any, pretty burns.
He swears through the longest day he's dead.
He'll show them that he can get ahead.
They say he's tired of his flaming top. He's got a yen to make a swap. So he rides one night he's here to find a head in the hollow here.
Now he likes a little, he likes a big.
Or in the middle or awake.
Black or white or even red.
The headless horseman, he's a head with
a tip and a glittering flap.
He's out looking for a cotton shop. So don't stop to take out a plan. You can't beat him with a headless man.
Now if you doubt this tale is so, I met that spook just a year ago. Now I didn't stop for a second look. The name of the bridge that spans the brook. But once you cross that bridge, my friend,
so when you're riding home tonight, make for the bridge with all your might. He'll be down in the hollow there. Keep your head to the
ground. And he's found looking for a place to spot. So don't try to paint her out of plan. You can't read the river at the end.
Sleepy Hollow, the Walt Disney classic, and believe it or not, yeah, you give me enough whiskey, I can even sing that song for you. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange, the big special Halloween edition of the program for this year, 2013. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, with producer Forrest Connor, and we're just out here in the middle of the woods, somewhere in Madison County, around a campfire. We decided that this was a good idea, supposedly, to do the show out here tonight, even though it's very cold, unless one is nestled up with the fire. We're going to camp out here tonight. Forrest's last sort of hurrah before he gets married on October 31st. And so, Forrest, you've been teasing us all along. Why did you pick this particular spot?
All right, I might want to take another drink of that real quick before we
before
I go into this.
Well, sure.
Remember last year, a couple years ago, some hikers got mauled by some bears up in Madison County.
I remember that in the news. Mm-hmm.
Well,
they were killed by this bear.
Yeah. They were actually right here.
So this, you're saying this is where those two people last year were killed and eaten by a bear?
Not necessarily eaten, but they were attacked right around this area. But I've been assured by the caretaker that, I mean, there's been people up here since then that have camped up here. And, you know, I told you it was a friend of a friend that turned me on to this place. And what really nailed it for me is people have been seeing some lights up here. I don't know if you know the peaks over here, but over here is Bailey Mountain.
Okay.
People have been seeing some strange lights and phenomena right there above the mountain.
So you're saying you chose this spot, you dragged me out here into the middle of this big, black, dark wilderness when it's freezing cold because two people were killed by a bear here and there have been some UFO sightings.
Basically.
All right.
But I've been assured.
Well, you know, I heard something big walking around in the woods.
It's nothing. Leaves.
Well, obviously, it could be a bear.
Or a deer.
Well, I mean, I suppose it could be a deer. I told you, I'm not armed. What do we do if a bear decides to come over here and attack us tonight?
Bear's not going to attack us tonight.
Well, when we were up camping on Brown Mountain, that was a black bear reserve, and I walked up on a bear twice out there.
Right, and did it do anything to you?
Fortunately, no. We looked at each other, and then in both cases, the bear turned around and ran off into the brush.
Okay. I mean, they supposedly caught the bears that did this, so there's nothing to worry about.
Bears, plural, huh, that did this. All right. Fine. Well, I know I'm not going to keep any food out tonight.
No.
That's for sure. So now it is kind of, so this is legitimately creepy. It's not just like, oh, haunted and UFOs. I mean, something could eat somebody.
You've got a fire going. I mean,
well, we better put another log on it. I see that you're keeping it going pretty well, but Shelley Wright is the smartest of the three. She's not here tonight. It's just me and Forrest out here camping.
Oh, the boy's not out.
Yeah. And, you know, well, Shelley is, again, she's supposedly under the weather, so please send your healing vibes in her direction if that's the case. It may be that we finally just picked something that was a little too far for Shelley to participate with, huh? Well, we wouldn't be camping out here anyway with Shelley. That would seem a little weird. You're about to get married. Your wife
right.
to be probably with
you. Got some party favors.
Okay. How about another creepy poem?
Let's do it.
It's the Halloween edition. Because soon I do want to talk a little bit about some ghost photography. Here's one of my favorite poems. It's called The Ghoul. Yeah. This is one that maybe kids would enjoy or not. The gruesome ghoul, the grisly ghoul, without the slightest noise, waits patiently beside the school to feast on girls and boys. He lunges fiercely through the air as they come out to play, then grabs a couple by the hair and drags them far away. He cracks their bones and snaps their backs and squeezes out their lungs. He chews their thumbs like candy snacks and pulls apart their tongues. He slices their stomachs and bites their hearts and tears their flesh to shreds. He swallows their toes like toasted tarts and gobbles down their heads. Fingers, elbows, hands and knees and arms and legs and feet. He eats them with delight and ease, for every part's a treat. And when the gruesome grisly ghoul has nothing left to chew, he hurries to another school and waits, perhaps for you. And the illustration is this bizarre, old-school Nosferatu-esque figure with the bald head and the pointy ears and the sardonic expression sitting on a jungle gym outside, just staring through the window of a little schoolhouse with pale-faced, frightened children inside looking back out at him, thinking, oh my God, I don't want to leave this building. Who is this guy? Look at that picture. He's waiting to get him. Another one of the classics from Nightmares, Poems to Trouble Your Sleep by Jack Perlitsky.
Well, Josh, I'll let you know one more little tidbit about this property you own.
Oh, great!
Something that you might know, something might strike a little close to home for you, but mm-hmm. this was, supposedly was the route that Colonel Keith, Lieutenant Colonel Keith, took up to Shelton Laurel.
For the Shelton Laurel Massacre.
Yes. Supposedly he went over this land right here.
So he cut this path through the mountains to go and massacre those people, and I think it was 1863 when that happened.
Yes.
Oh, this just keeps getting better and better, doesn't it?
I mean, I thought, you know, Mr. UFO guy, Mr.
Yeah.
Mr. Historical Research on the Shelton Laurel Massacre might find this interesting.
It is. It's fascinating. I mean, I can almost imagine that I'm sitting out here in 1863, and this horrible incident's about to take place somewhere nearby. Well, I guess I should say, well done, Mr. Connor. Well done. You've picked a very creepy place. There are a lot of spooky places in the mountains around here, but sounds like you've outdone yourself on this one. You know, it's one thing for us to sit around and talk about ghosts and ghouls and things that may or may not happen, but here's a news story that I saw from Before It's News, and if this is legit, this is scary on a whole new level. You know, we've heard for a long time that eventually there could be a massive electrical power grid shutdown from a solar flare or a man-made EMP blast like Bill Forsten talked about in his book 1 Second After.
Right.
Well, now, apparently the drum pounding is getting frenzied in this country because authorities are saying that the likelihood of something like this actually happening is 100% in the near future. Apparently, Janet Napolitano said as her parting shot that something severe was going to hit the U.S. soon. Quote, a massive and serious cyber attack on the U.S. homeland is coming, and a natural disaster the likes of which the nation has never seen is also likely on its way, end quote. Now, to give this more weight, this is why thousands of utility workers, business executives, National Guard officers, FBI, anti-terrorism experts, and officials from the various government agencies in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico are preparing for an emergency drill in November of 2013. That's next month, folks. That will simulate physical attacks and cyber attacks that could take down large sections of the power grid. They're going to practice for a crisis unlike anything the real grid has ever seen, and more than 150 companies and organizations have signed up to participate. They say this is different from a hurricane that hits X, Y, and Z counties, and they have a loss of power for 3 or 4 days. They're looking at something that is really extensive and wide scale, and apparently Nat Geo is doing a movie. I think it's going to air tomorrow night, which sort of digs into the possibility. So, you know, we keep telling folks, don't wait until it's too late to get a Sunshine Simple solar generator. That's what we're powering our production with tonight. This will ensure you always have the power you need to avoid the darkness on those nights. Keep your computer and communication devices charged. Yeah. If you get one of these things, you're investing in your own security and that of your family as well. Be sure to go to sunshinesimple.com. Lao Tzu, the philosopher, said, if you do not change direction, you may end up where you are heading. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to tell you some interesting thoughts on ghost photography. Because if you've never been to see world's wildest ghost photos at joshuapwarren.com, you should go look at that right now. There's no period after the P. And we'll talk a little bit about capturing these things on film when we return. I am Joshua P. Warren, and you are listening tonight to a Halloween edition of Speaking of Strange.
I am the one hiding under your bed. teeth ground sharp and the eyes glowing red.
I am the one hiding under your stairs. Fingers like snakes and spiders in my hair.
Spending your evening with us. I'm Joshua B. Warren, and what a setup we have tonight for this Halloween edition of the program. I'm with producer Forrest Connor. We are out here in the woods. It's cold, it's spooky, and well, that's why we hope that you'll turn your lights down and light some candles and kind of get into the mood of Halloween with us. That's why we do these shows at Halloween the way we do them. And for those of you who are in front of a computer, you know, I mentioned that if you go to my personal website, joshuapwarren.com, there is no period after the P, go to joshuapwarren.com, you'll find a section there called World's Wildest Ghost Photos. And you'll see numerous pages of images that I have collected over the past 20-plus years of professional work in this field that I think are the most outstanding and credible. Because it's true, we have more cameras and more images around than ever, but we also have more hoaxes out there. And I place a lot of stock in images that have been captured either by people I know well and trust, or stuff that was captured by myself and my team. And one of these pictures that was I just kind of discovered, if you will, this year that just blows my mind is from the Reynolds Mansion. And the Reynolds Mansion is probably the second oldest house around here. The Smith McDowell House is the oldest house in Asheville. It was built in 1840. And the Reynolds Mansion was built in the late 1840s. The Smith McDowell House is a museum, but the Reynolds Mansion is an active, fully functional bed and breakfast. And you get to see this photograph that was apparently in a drawer for over 40 years that shows this incredible full-bodied apparition of a woman standing at the top of the staircase outside the room where Annie Lee Reynolds died. And people have seen her ghost there for a long time, but in 1971, this photograph was captured during some renovations, and it's just amazing to me that it has only sort of surfaced this year. So, but here's sort of where where this gets interesting, where it takes a twist. You know, I'm looking at all these pictures that I call the world's wildest ghost photos, and as I look over them, I realize that pretty much all the pictures, including the one at the White House, and they all came from either Europe or the U.S. And I started questioning, can I legitimately call this the world's wildest ghost photos? Why don't we have any from Asia posted there? How about, you know, why not Africa or Australia, etc.? And I became very curious about why this might be. And the first thing that occurred to me was that, well, imaging technology was created in Europe and the Americas. And as I went further down this train of thought, I asked myself a question, and Forrest, I want to direct this to you, okay, because you and I have been trivia rivals for a long, long time. And so I'm going to ask you a basic trivia question.
All right.
And I didn't know the answer to this, and it kind of amazed me that I didn't know and that the average person wouldn't know this because it's so important. Forrest, who is credited as the inventor of photography?
It's a French guy. I knew this at one time, and I would say Jabardo, something like some kind of
French. How do you know Jabardo?
No, I don't know right offhand.
Actually, the guy who is sort of considered to be the father of photography is an Englishman, and his name was Thomas Wedgwood. And around the year 1790, he captured some of the very first images with light-sensitive chemicals.
Right. Actually, the first photo was taken, I think, from his window. It shows a cityscape.
Actually, you're very good, Forrest. You're actually talking about the next guy who came after him, who is or was a Frenchman.
Okay.
But, well, and let me go ahead also and say as a side note that there are records going back for thousands of years that people knew a little bit about the photography process. In fact, even hundreds of years ago, Da Vinci talked about caves that you could go into that had little openings that formed a natural pinhole, like a pinhole camera, and you could hold a piece of paper in front of it and see some type of a reversed image of the landscape outside.
Nice.
So the idea of photography has been around. Some people, you know, it's a controversy. Some people even say Da Vinci understood enough to create a photographic print, which is the Shroud of Turin. I don't know if that's true or not, but in terms of mainstream history, this guy, Thomas Wedgwood, who also comes from the famous family of potters there, Wedgwood Pottery, he is considered really the first true photographer, and because he was taking these camera obscura type devices and projecting the image onto light-sensitive chemicals. However, his images could only be viewed in a dark room, because if the whole thing were exposed to light, it would just kind of overdevelop the whole thing. He died when he was only 34 years old. He was in poor health his whole life. But think for a second, before I continue, about how incredible it would be to be the guy who was the inventor of photography, and nobody knows your name.
That would suck.
Yeah, because that revolutionized everything about how we view the world. So after Thomas Wedgwood died, this is when the Frenchman you're thinking of came along. He picked up the torch, and he was the first guy who really produced photography as we know it. His name, and I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, was Nicéphore Niépce. And he captured some great images around 1825, and he actually captured the oldest surviving photograph in 1825. And you're right, he's looking out a window, and it's kind of a roofscape in the city he was in. And he was able to create, you know, images that could be viewed and distributed in general without it being degraded. He died when he was in his 50s. But now we take this leap forth, and we go to the father of cinematography. Now, when you think of the guy who developed cinematography, that is motion picture filmmaking as we know it, who do you think of first?
I mean, first one would be George Eastman. I mean...
Well, most people would say Thomas Edison, because Thomas Edison, he pioneered, he had his first motion picture studio there in New Jersey, but it turns out the first guy, and this is weird, the first guy who really created motion picture was another Frenchman named Louis Le Prince, and he created a motion picture around 1888, and... One of the reasons you may not know about Louis Le Prince is that he mysteriously vanished. When we come back, I'll tell you a little bit more about that and then continue with my train of thought on how this might apply to why some of the best ghost photographs in the world are from Europe and the U.S. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You are listening to Speaking of Strange. Night I know in the town below, the werewolf prowls the street. He stalks with stealth and cunning in his search for a soul to eat. With matted hair and jaws that tear, the werewolf prowls the street. His face is filled with fury as his brain cries out for meat. And oh, his prey shall not see day. For the werewolf prowls the street. So I shake beneath my covers, and I shiver in my sheet, and I cower in my bed with a pillow on my head as the werewolf prowls the street. Nightmares, Poems to Trouble Your Sleep by Jack Prelutsky. That was called The Werewolf. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange, the Halloween edition of the show. I am Joshua P. Warren, out here in the cold, dark wilderness with Forrest Connor for this special remote.
Currently stoking the fire right now.
Yes, please do. It's just, it's not getting any warmer out here, that's for sure. So, before the break, I was talking about the world's wildest ghost photos. You can see at joshuapwarren.com, and how I think it's interesting that most of them seem to come from Europe and the U.S. Well, around 1888, a Frenchman named Louis Le Prince, he shot the first moving pictures on paper film, using a single-lens camera, and has been heralded as, quote, the father of cinematography. But what's weird is that he, sometime around 1890 there, mysteriously vanished. He boarded a train, and that was it. His body and luggage were never found. But over a century later, a police archive was found that contained a photograph of a drowned man who could have been him. LaFrance's disappearance allowed Thomas Edison to take the credit for the invention of motion pictures. But, you know, Edison was an inventor and a businessman and a good PR guy. So Louis LaFrance probably deserves the original credit. There has been a conspiracy, you know, that Thomas Edison had him done away with. Which, you know, it sounds silly at first, but if you think about it, I mean, Thomas Edison would go to some extreme lengths to protect what he thought was his rightful inventive intellectual property. I mean, when he was having the big famous debate with Tesla over AC versus DC, Thomas Edison orchestrated a demonstration in which he electrocuted an elephant to death. And you know, to say, hey, look how dangerous AC is. It can take out an elephant. You want this in your homes? Yeah. And so, I mean, Edison was capable of going to some extremes. As a matter of fact, Edison insisted that the very first electric chair be AC powered, and I think he wanted to call it a Westinghouse chair or something like that, because Westinghouse was Tesla's partner. So Edison, you know, could be pretty cutthroat. And who knows if Edison did away with him or if it was just convenient. Regardless.
He's on a express trip to PWAM.
Yeah, that could be it. Up there with Ralph Lael. But you could say, all right, maybe the world's wildest ghost photos come from the U.S. and Europe because those are the countries that spearheaded imaging technology, but maybe it has more to do with a cultural perspective because, you know, interestingly enough, over the years, I have spoken to a number of people who are blind, and they say they can still see ghosts. Their eyeballs cannot detect one photon of light, but they can see ghosts. So it's almost like maybe seeing ghosts is part of a perception that comes through a third eye, another sense that's being done in the brain. On the other hand, we know there are certain components of ghosts that can be photographed, because I even photographed a ghost once that I saw.
Right. Well, I was wanting to give them the same line. Like my fiance Kelly, being hearing impaired, she can hear stuff that I cannot hear.
Right.
I mean, she'll say, I hear something going on, and I will not hear it.
Yeah.
And, like, who knows, there might be a different frequency that she can hear on that we can't, which goes back to your whole thing is, like, the colorblind people might be, you got colorblind people, why don't you have people that can see beyond the normal color of what we can?
Those who are able to see the aura very easily.
Right.
So that's why I think that, you know, this idea of ghost photography becomes very complex, because it begs the question, how much of a role does the individual taking the photograph play in the degree to which the ghost is recorded on the medium? So that is to say, is it possible that in some cases the perception of the individual is being almost telekinetically projected onto the film or other medium to capture the image? And if that's the case, well, then it would make it obviously clear that the cultural perspective plays a role. Because if you live in a culture, for example, like many of the places I've been to in Puerto Rico, where people don't want to talk about ghosts, they don't want to think about it, well, then obviously you're going to have less of a likelihood of them projecting a ghostly image from what they are perceiving onto the film.
Well, that's the same way with Asian cultures. Asian cultures, you do not talk about ghosts. I mean, I know a girl who has a woman tattoo that says ghost woman on it in Chinese or Japanese characteristics.
Uh-huh.
And she says every time like a Chinese person or a Japanese person sees that, they sort of shut her away from her because it's something that's taboo that they do not talk about.
Wow. So, you see, that the very fact that most of the good, credible images come from countries where it's okay to talk about this stuff makes you think that maybe the mind of the person involved is playing more of a significant role on what makes it onto the recorded medium. And therefore, you know, this becomes a very complex, almost quantum problem, trying to understand what that relationship is between the mind, the body, and the environment when ghosts are involved and when they are being captured on film. So, you know, it's still something that needs a lot of work and needs a lot of thought, but keep that in mind when you are looking at these pictures, because even psychical research as we know it was created in England in the 1800s. And, of course, has continued to explode ever since here in the U.S. And even right here in North Carolina, thanks to the legacy of J.B. Rhine at Duke University and the Rhine Research Center, and that's where this idea of parapsychology comes into play, the idea that the mind is playing a significant role. Here's one of my favorite little creepy ghost stories that I like to read this time of year. It's called The Brown Suit. A woman came to the funeral parlor to see her husband's corpse. "You did a good job," she said to the undertaker. "He looks just the way he always looked, except for one thing. My husband always wore a brown suit, but you have him dressed in a blue suit." "Oh, that's no problem," said the undertaker. "We can easily change it." When she returned later, her husband was wearing a brown suit. "Ah, now he looks just the way he always did," she said. "I know you went to a lot of trouble." "Oh, it was no trouble," he said. "As it happened, there is a man here who was wearing a brown suit, and his widow felt that blue would be better. He's about your husband's size, so we gave him the blue one and gave your husband the brown one." "Well, even so," she said, "changing all that clothing was a big job." "Eh, not really," said the undertaker. "All we did was exchange their heads." Another dun-dun-dun. "Don't you ever cry as the hearse comes by." I did see a light over there, actually. Kind of has a greenish tint.
Yeah.
I thought it was an airplane.
I don't know. It's not flashing.
There it is again. It's not flashing.
Weird.
Let me see if this will show up on my digital phone camera here. No, it's too faint. It's not showing up. I'll snap a picture anyway. So, how many UFO sightings have there been out here for?
I mean, the person I talked to said every night they've come up here in the past couple months, they've seen something out here.
Well, maybe we just saw a UFO. We're definitely going to keep looking up at that.
It's right there above Bailey Mountain.
That's the same place you were pointing out.
Yeah.
For those of you who are just tuning in, because this is our Halloween edition, we are outside, and we're in the middle of nowhere in Madison County, in Forest Springs and Alameda. There were two people. I remember this in the news, but I didn't know where it was. Two people were killed here by a bear last year, and there have been some UFO sightings out here. So what a perfect environment for us to do a Halloween show. And it's going to get scarier, my friends. Later on, I'm going to play some exorcism music for you. Not music. Well, actually, I have some music too, but exorcism audio for you from a real, authentic exorcism. And yes, more scary stories and more spooky poems. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Thank you.
ask you, how many times do you do radio shows do people play this intro?
So many times that I only allow this song to be played once a year on Speaking of Strange. I allow it to be played the Halloween edition, just like we're doing tonight, and that's it. Because for over 20 years, this is how I've been introduced.
Every single radio show, they think they're being, oh, it's the ghost guy. Let's put the Ghostbusters theme on.
It doesn't matter if I'm being interviewed in Ireland or New Zealand or, well, I mean, yeah. And I think, can't you be a little more creative than that? But no, you know, these guys are DJs, and they just say, oh, we have a ghost guy on. We got to play Ghostbusters. So.
Even the Ghostbusters 2 theme. I mean, how often do you...
Yeah, so here you go. This is for you folks. The one time per year on this show, you get to hear Ghostbusters. Number 2 on tonight's special Halloween edition of Speaking of Strange. Coming up next hour, it's the Dark 30 hour, and yeah, I'm going to read some Dark 30 stories, but also some more ghost stories, some more poems, and eventually I'm going to play some very creepy audio, authentic audio from an exorcism. We're out here in the woods. For all I know, there are bears listening to the show like 10 feet away. Now, hopefully they're entertained. We saw some weird light. It's a greenish light. And here's the story from Orlando. They say an interesting shopper. Oh, yeah, there we go. Yeah, there it is. Orlando, Florida. Almost forgot. It's so weird. We're out here in the woods. I forgot we had the bell. We brought the bell. Good thinking, Forrest.
Can't forget the Florida bell.
They say an interesting shopper was found outside of an Orange County Walmart. A 6-foot gator by the sliding glass door trying to walk into Walmart. Kids were running. Fortunately, nobody got hurt. They called the gator boys or whoever takes care of that stuff. Oh, man. Gators and bears. Those are the two biggies here in this country. And occasionally a crocodile. Not very often, but they
and
make
And your occasional skunk ape.
Well, yeah, that's right. Skunk apes. It's always in Florida. I think I have time to squeeze this story in before the break. A man named Joseph Blackwell came to Philadelphia on a business trip. He stayed with friends in the big house they owned outside the city. And that night, they had a good time visiting. But when Blackwell went to bed, he tossed and turned and couldn't sleep. Well, sometime during the night, he heard a car turn into the driveway, and he went to the window to see who was arriving at such a late hour. And in the moonlight, he saw a long black hearse filled with people. The driver of the hearse looked up at him, and when Blackwell saw his queer, hideous face, he shuddered. And the driver called to him, "There's room for one more." Then he waited for a minute or two and he drove off. In the morning, Blackwell told his friends what had happened. "Oh, you were dreaming," they said. "I must have been," he said, "but it didn't seem like a dream." After breakfast, he went into Philadelphia and he spent the day high above the city in one of the new office buildings there. Late in the afternoon, he was waiting for an elevator to take him back down to the street. But when it arrived, it was very crowded. One of the passengers looked out and called to him. "Oh, there's room for one more," he said. It was the driver of the hearse. "No thanks," said Blackwell. "I'll get the next one." The doors closed. And the elevator started down, There was shrieking and screaming, and then the sound of crash. The elevator had fallen to the bottom of the shaft. Everyone aboard was killed.
I just burnt myself.
Did you burn yourself? Good going, Forrest. How badly?
Not bad. I'll live.
That story was called Room for One More, from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, collected from folklore and retold by Alvin Schwartz. That's another great book. You know, in fact, I think due to the popular demand, I might have to read another one of the stories that Alvin Schwartz put together for us years ago about Harold. You remember the story of Harold?
Yes.
That's a good one. Everybody loves that story. Yeah, these were books published in, you know, like the early 90s. So, you know, Forrest, do you have any reservations about us playing the exorcism stuff later? Because no. one of my producers years ago,
I remember,
had serious problems. Like, we're not even making it up. I mean, he had serious problems.
I remember he had a problem, and I remember that I've done this for past several years now with the show, and also remember that people always call in or people always email and say, Joshua, don't do this. It's bad.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, believe it or not, we are going to have one more hour left of this program, the final hour. We call it the Dark 30 Hour. I'm going to read some more controversial news, not for the kiddies, and also plenty of great poems and stories, and who knows, I might even deliver an incantation here from the Necronomicon. I am Joshua P. Warren, and you are listening to Speaking of Strange.